Welcome to Sanitas at sanitasradio.com. And now, here's your host, Mel Fabregas.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Sanitas at sanitasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And to listen to tonight's full interview and all of our material, all you need to do is subscribe by going to sanitasradio.com. And if you would like to write to me, you would like to be a guest on this radio program, or would like to submit a guest suggestion or simply feedback, I'd love to hear from you. Just go to our website and click on the contact link. Powerful keys to personal transformation and the evolution of humanity lie within our own darkness. We have always evolved through direct confrontation with the shadow, an unfortunate but essential teacher in the game of life. Why would anyone want to study darkness? Why study war, political conspiracies, psychopaths, and disease? Why would we want to look into our own darkness, formed long ago by terrible things that once trapped and hurt us? Why do that when there are so many brighter, lighter, truly wonderful sides to life that deserve our attention? If we look too closely at darkness, we'll fall into it, won't we? And to tell us more, tonight's special guests are Colin Davis and Melissa Mary. They are both musicians and artists who have written a book titled Shadow Tech, a fascinating venture into the world of the personal as well as the external geopolitical shadows. They'll be discussing the book and what seems to be a shamanic quest to better understand the destructive force in the universe and how it manifests into human consciousness. The websites are shadowtechbook.com and livinginthemovie.com, which are both linked at ours. And directly from San Francisco, California, I would like to welcome Colin Davis and Melissa Mari. Hello, Colin and Melissa. Welcome to Sanitas.
Oh, thanks, Mel. Thanks for having us. Yeah, really appreciate being here.
It's my pleasure. And when you sent me the book, the title, Shadow Tech, what is Shadow Tech about?
Yeah, Shadow Tech is it's a report really from our own experiences of trying to understand the shadow, whether that's the dark side of our own psyches or how it manifests in our culture. And it's sort of our own study into the shadow, and it's also our experiences and some of the techniques and processes that we've been using on ourselves to heal ourselves and to transform our own darkness into our highest purpose.
Yes, it's basically a very organic investigation that's ongoing as a way for us to really go deeply into ourselves to heal the places that have been keeping us back, to help us evolve. And we've always been very curious people. And when we got together, something quite magical happened, and all these synchronicities happened, and these downloads started happening. And this just took us more than we took it on. It took us on, and then we just accepted it and went with it, and we continue to do so.
Well, if you are curious minds, all I have to say is welcome home.
Thanks,
now,
Phil.
The duality or polarity of our universe. Some people say, you know, why is there evil in this world? Mm-hmm. Why is there darkness? But isn't duality something that we have to live with? There's evil. If there's good, there's light, there's darkness, there's hot, there's cold.
Yeah, it's true. If you really just try to trace back any thought, any concept, any philosophical principle back, you'll always find that your mind cannot help but frame things in opposites. I call it a meta program, a term I borrowed from John Lilly, but duality seems to be a master meta program within which our consciousness manifests. Now, it's true that you can, through certain techniques, enter into a non-dual state of consciousness, but our waking state of consciousness as human beings, at least at this phase of our evolution, is all framed within this duality context. And so this is the overreaching program that we have to deal with. And within that program, yes, it's a polarity situation. And so anytime you have anything really, it's going to have to be framed within this this duality context. And there's nothing you can do about it. You have to accept that this is the way this state of consciousness that we're in works. And trying to fight it, trying to ignore the dark side, or trying to project it or blame other people for being the carriers of darkness, really is just a futile act that just keeps yourself in an immature state. And so a big part of us doing this work, of working on our own darkness, was to have to come to terms with the role of destruction in the universe and the role of it in human society and in our own psyches.
Do you want to add something to that, Melissa?
Well, I would just say, you know, ancient people and Eastern philosophy has understood the concept of duality for thousands of years. Obviously, yeah. You look at the yin-yang and it's broken exactly in half.
Yeah, it's true.
So,
night and day.
Yeah, exactly. Life and death.
Night and day, good and bad. Everything is left and right, in and out. Everything is in this duality.
But when
context.
You really accept the nature of duality on a deeper level in your consciousness, when you really know that you're never going to get away from this, there's a certain kind of freedom and acceptance which actually turns on the heart. It turns on compassion. And then you can actually look at your own psyche and your own shadow in a new kind of a way, not as something to run away from, but as something to fully accept and delve into.
If you damage the physiological structure of human beings early on, doesn't that give rise to, as you call it, autonomous complex? Let me pick on one. Circumcision is one example of child trauma. Notice the countries that have the highest rate of circumcised males are the United States, 32.5%, and in 1965, 85% of all males were circumcised. That trauma stays in the cellular memory for the rest of your life. I bet you can find a correlation between circumcision and wars. That early trauma must translate somehow into something, don't you think?
Yeah, well, you touched on a number of things here, and yeah, it's what it. When I look at that statistic, first of all, I notice that circumcision is a practice which traces back to the Semitic roots of Western civilization and has been going on in the Middle East and I believe in Egypt for thousands of years. But it is a feature of Western patriarchal civilization. And you talked about it being a traumatic event. From our point of view, it occurs to us that the very structure of patriarchal civilization is traumatizing to children. The very way in which society is structured hierarchically, and in the way in which our society punishes people physically, very brutally often, especially in our past, for going outside of the cultural status quo, is a traumatizing civilization to a great degree. And Western patriarchal civilization seems to me to have a role in the development of the human being, where you could see patriarchal civilization as similar to that stage in our consciousness when a child grows up and grows away from the mother and more towards the father. And the father comes in and basically says, okay, well, in the real world, there are more rules that you're going to have to follow. And here are boundaries that I'm going to set up for you. And often it's the father that's in our families. It's the father that's really, in this society, making a lot of or setting the boundaries and holding the boundaries. And this is what leadership does in Western patriarchal civilization. It very strongly holds the boundaries and says, this is where you're going to go and this is where you're not going to go. It's like the Cain and Abel story out of the Bible. Abel presented an offering to Yahweh that suited the needs of that stage of the society, and Cain did not. And we can go into the symbolic nature of those offerings, but basically God said, look, here's what the rule set for the status quo society is. And if you go outside of that, it's total and complete destruction and abandonment for you. And this is sort of the structure. This is the way in which Western civilization for thousands of years has been based. And we can go into the oppression of monarchies and the oppression of the Catholic Church. And patriarchal Western civilization, or all patriarchal civilization up to this point, has been extremely punitive. And so I can think of all kinds of different examples of how the child and the human being is traumatized and not allowed to grow as they naturally would, and are forced into a set of social rules that if you get out of that, it's over for you. And this inherently traumatizes people, and it inherently causes us to repress or to project energy that is otherwise blocked because it is not allowed in our society.
Yeah, exactly. This energy, basically, it's the abandonment from the feminine, from the mother energy, from the goddess energy, which is your heart energy.
It's true.
And when that gets shut off, there becomes all this blocked, repressed energy. And on one hand, Colin kind of got into this. That built our culture. It built our technology.
It's true.
That cut off a very patriarchal energy is what propelled us into advancement in so many areas. But at the same time, it shut off our hearts. It shut off the heart chakra and created immense amounts of trauma for both male and females.
Yeah.
But understanding how this work is helpful, because we see now that the feminine, the heart, is showing itself back on this planet in a big way. I think it's a natural state of evolution. I believe that probably prior to the patriarchal societies,
we know this.
We know that there were matriarchal societies.
And that civilization was just more aligned with nature, which is more of a feminine way of being.
Right.
I was going to say, how was the world when let's call it the divine feminine, the mm-hmm. matriarchal society, how was the world back then?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of different, research and historians have different views about that. I believe that there was a time probably that it was very harmonious, just as you see in some indigenous cultures. But there comes a point where that can get out of balance, too. They started having sacrifices. There is a negative feminine force, too.
Yeah, when the feminine gets out of balance. Well, so male...
Kali.
If we just look at the indigenous cultures that are still around today in South America, in Africa, in Australia. I think that gives us an idea of basically what pre-civilized mankind lived like. And you could say that they lived more harmoniously with nature. I mean, they were forced to live with nature and with the natural boundaries, and they didn't have the mindset developed yet to where they could develop the complexification and specialization of culture, and the creation of complex tools wasn't there yet. And so you really couldn't push off nature very much. And so you could say that that is living with nature, that is living symbiotically with nature. You could say that's closer to the way that a child lives with the mother, and closer to the mother when they are very young. But also, that doesn't mean that this kind of harmony was without the destructive force, because obviously when a hurricane comes in, when something, out of the natural world of a volcano or an earthquake or anything, or just you deplete your environment of its resources, you face destruction very, very powerfully. And so it's not that we shouldn't over mythologize the pre-civilized state and think that this was a state of complete and total bliss, and if we could just go back to living like we did in Paleolithic times, everything will be okay again. You can't go backwards. It's like a child cannot, an adult cannot go back to being a child. So, this patriarchal stage is a stage of development that human beings apparently had to go through. We could question it and say, did it have to be so rough? Did it have to be so tough? Did it have to be so hard? Did it have to be so murderous? Did it have to be like that? And we could debate that, but it is what we have. And then, like Melissa said, it seems like the feminine is coming back now. I would just say that probably what is happening is that both of these dominant states of mind are starting to merge and are starting to integrate. And the idea of coming to spiritual adulthood is that you do not cut off your childlike instincts, you do not cut off your animal instincts, and you do not cut off or try to throw away your logical left brain capabilities either, but you integrate these things into a whole human being. And it hasn't been done before. It's not something that any culture has evolved into yet. And so we're just slowly but surely moving into this spiritual, psychological adulthood. And now we're doing it as a global community. We're not just doing it as one community, one society anymore. And that makes it even more difficult. But this is where we're moving, and we can start to see these energies of the we call it homo bilancia, the balanced human being. These archetypal symbols and energies are starting to come into our patriarchal culture to start to shift us into a more balanced mode.
Also, I would say that evolution wants novelty. It mm-hmm. doesn't want the status. It will create... Yeah. Destruction in order to push us to evolve. That's how destruction works. Basically, you know, the destruction comes, and if you can't evolve out of that in new novel ways, then yes, the destructive side will destroy you.
Where you're weak, where you're out of balance, destruction rushes in, and that's what forces you to either rebalance yourself or to make a quantum shift in the way that you perceive and the way that you live.
But isn't that survival of the fittest?
Survival of the fittest definitely comes out of that instinct, or that basic archetypal reality of evolve or die. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe look at the DNA and genes. The very strong genes are the ones that are passed generation through generation. But look at since we're talking about patriarchal societies, mm-hmm. look at the movie Avatar. There was a male warrior, mm-hmm. but the spiritual anchor and supreme leader was a female.
Yes.
A female gives and nourishes life, not the male. And I think this is what's missing, the missing balance we have in today's modern, quote unquote, civilization.
Absolutely.
That is true. But I believe that that women also, there's a big movement of women coming back in touch with their goddesshood, which is great. But some of it is a separation from the male. And so
the feminist movement, for example?
Well, kind of, but I believe that there needs to be a healing of the feminine as far as what is the deep feminine, and accepting that in ourselves, because we have shut off our femininity. It's become distorted and we've shut it off in ourselves. A lot of us have to become man-like in order to survive in the world. There's a very deep receptive energy in the feminine that women, as myself anyway, it's really have been needing to heal that. We've become abandoned from that feminine energy just as much as men have.
Yes, it's true.
But I do believe that ultimately it's an integration, just like in the alchemical journey. It's a cultural representation of that, mm-hmm. of the divine wedding between male and female.
Or masculine and feminine
masculine
energies.
Masculine, feminine right. energies. That needs to be integrated within ourselves individually and then also as a culture. The separation doesn't work at this point. So I don't believe in the fact that we would just go back to a matriarchal society.
Right.
I don't see that as happening. I see it as an integration and we call it homo bilancia, the balanced human.
I'm so glad you mentioned this, and you mentioned, Colin, the feminist movement. I didn't expect that we were going to be talking about this, mm-hmm. but I remember many, many years ago when I used to be in the corporate world, you know, in the financial industry, which was predominantly male-oriented.
Right.
You had a few females that, you know, I remember I had a boss who was a female, and she would have dinner with me and she would tell me, you know, sometimes because I'm in a world of men, I have to go the extra mile and do more things and this and that. And not to get political, but this is why I'm concerned a bit when I hear Hillary Clinton running for president,
right.
because right. something strikes me. As she's going to prove herself better than men, she's going to probably go out to create wars just to say, I can do it as just as good as men. But it's not that she's trying to be a woman. She's trying to move the pendulum the other way.
Well,
she's trying to stay. She's saying, if I can be allowed to be president, I will basically represent the masculine archetypes that you're used to.
Precisely.
Just as well as anybody else. She's not saying I'm going to bring in the feminine energy that you have been needing.
Exactly.
I see Hillary Clinton as being a very injured woman, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I believe that, I mean, I can't prove it, obviously.
No,
I don't know her past, but, well, there's a lot that you can prove of as far as the negative things that she's been involved in, but
we can speak for hours about that, but let's not go there. Yeah.
Yeah. But I believe that she's been traumatized just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
And, so the shadow, basically she's somebody who possibly could be, being taken over by these autonomous complexes. The shadow, she may have been so traumatized in some way.
Okay, can you define that? I don't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. But can you define autonomous complex?
Or what we call the virus or parasitic.
Right. Okay, well, it's not really that crazy of a term because psychologists have been using it for a long time. The Jungians, the people who follow the work of Carl Jung, go into this very deeply. But a complex is sort of the way I like to basically explain it is, if you can view the human mind, which is the same thing as the psyche, it's the same thing basically. Some people tend to think that the mind is sort of head-based and the psyche is body-based. I wouldn't say that. I would say that the mind and the psyche are the same thing. They are the internal informational energetic state of the human being. And if you could see the human mind as sort of a computer operating system, then you could call complexes are these programs that are running within your operating system. They are personality programs. Some of them are some aspects of them are conscious and some aspects of them are unconscious. And when you have a program that is running so powerfully that the conscious ego the conscious ego can't do anything with it, that the conscious ego can't stop it from doing what it would do on its own, then it's autonomous. And just think of any cycle or any impulse that someone may have, which often are very powerful impulses of our personality, are drive us through life. But when you have no control over a complex, when you have no control over an impulse, and it is basically running your life, it's autonomous. And really, though, these functions of the psyche, these programs of the psyche, are all to a great degree, they are autonomous to a great degree. There is an ecosystem within your psyche of energetics or programs which are pretty much doing their own thing, just like how your cells and all of the bacteria in your body are pretty much doing their own thing outside of your conscious awareness or ability to control. Well, your psychic programs are doing the same thing. And if you have a psychological wound, for example, that gives rise to a complex that you might just call a neurosis, but it becomes so out of control that it takes over your personality and drives you, you know, often towards destructive ends, you could call that an autonomous program or autonomous complex, or you could call it a shadow program or a shadow archetype or there's lots of terms that you could use.
Or you could call it a demon or a djinn, being possessed, shamans, or I call them energy systems.
Or archons or Wetiko.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly.
These are all different terms. It's sort of like, I think because we don't generally spend a lot of time trying to form any kind of models of what's going on inside of us. And of course, the whole science of psychology is about trying to model the psyche. But the general public doesn't get involved in this. And I think it's very helpful to try to come to terms or try to form your own model, whatever works for you, whether you're using a Freudian understanding or a Jungian understanding, or you're trying to make up your own understanding by mixing models like what we're doing. It's very important to try to get a grasp on what are these different fields or programs or energy systems that are working in your psyche, and when are they becoming active and when are they dormant, and where do they come from? Were some of these genetic, or some of these cultural, or some of these formed out of trauma from your early childhood? And to try to get your mind around what it is, try to map what it is that you're made of at the psychic level.
But even today, I saw an article where this may sound unrelated to what we're discussing, but I think it is related. Mm-hmm. An article about the incidence of ADHD and anxiety mm-hmm. in children, which is at a pandemic level. And mm-hmm. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this seems to me to be induced autonomous complex in order for the pharmaceutical industry to own the children's minds, in this case with the drug Adderall.
Yeah, Mel, ADHD is, there's a scholar that I appreciate a lot named Jordan Peterson out of Canada. And he was actually just talking about this recently in a video I was watching of his. And I think he pointed this out very clearly that it is not natural for a child, especially a young child, to be forced into a classroom where everything is completely ordered with, bells and buzzers and tests and proper posture and proper handwriting and proper this and proper that and memorization.
This is
and
all
such
part
and such.
Of the patriarchal culture that we've been in.
Right.
It's necessary, at least in some form, it's necessary to build this this whole logical cognitive aspect of the mind. But the way in which it's done very punitively, like this, and where you get especially boys who are the ones who really like A-type personality or very energetic boys are the ones that suffer from this the most. And these kids should be out playing, doing, working through their development.
Using
their imagination, using just the unfoldment of their natural genetics in social situations, in the playground. And the structuring aspect should be brought in slowly but surely. But with a very high amount of sensitivity to the fact that children, this is a relatively new thing to human development. And you force these kids into this situation and say, you either act this way or you're out of bounds. And it's parents, it's teachers, it's the social hierarchs, it's the patriarchal father that's coming down and looking at these children acting out and saying, you're being bad, you're wrong. And basically that puts a massive amount of psychic pressure on children. The children are saying to themselves, I don't know, I just have this energy. I just can't be here in this classroom doing this, and I'm bad, and I'm And the whole thing is traumatizing. And so they say, well, in order to force these kids to do what they naturally would not do, let's put them on this drug to activate this aspect of their brain, you know, sooner and get them more focused and on the attention and focusing their attention. And this is shameful. It's shameful, but it's also a sign, the increasing amount of ADD and ADHD. These, we could go down the list, as you know, we could go down the list and look at every, just look at thousands of features of our society, which are clearly destructive, dysfunctional. And these are all symptoms of a civilization in free fall.
Yes, we're going through a cleansing, just like the Hopi prophecy. This is a cleansing time, and we are way out of balance.
It's basically evolve or die time.
Yes, it's saying to us as a culture, look at yourself, look at the deeper layers of what's going on. First of all, the parents have to look at their lives and their own personal psyche. It just revolves. It always comes back to looking within ourselves, within our culture. But until we get to the root of this,
what does it do to when a child is diagnosed with ADHD and they're given a prescription for Ritalin or Adderall or whatever the drug is they're giving now, and the parent hears about this and the parent says, well, okay, I guess my son has ADHD and I'm just going to give him this Ritalin and so he'll stay in the class and all of that. That is when that decision is made by the parent. The parent is basically showing, they're showing the society that they are not willing to go through the difficulty that is they're going to face to defy the system, to go against what the what the status quo is and to invent their own new reality. Because to take the child out of school, to homeschool the child, or to get another diagnosis from another doctor who has a totally different mindset is not only going to be a lot of work for the parent, but it is going to cause the parent to go into their own withdrawal. They're going to have to basically wake up to the fact that the system which is supporting them, they go to work every day and they are prescribing to all of the attributes of the culture, saying, okay, well, I'm going to send my son to college and then we're going to do this and we're going to play soccer and we're going to give him music lessons and all of the things that you think you're supposed to do to with your children. Once you take that step and you say, wait a minute, all the doctors that are telling me this are wrong. The teachers are wrong. The way they're schooling my child is totally wrong. But yet this is something that's going on all over the place in all these other communities. You're basically going against the entire culture. That's a huge amount of pressure on you as an individual, as a parent. You have to wake up now. You have to wake up to the destructive culture. You have to do something completely different. Like, we have some friends who have a very sensitive, very intelligent and very sensitive, probably artist child who's about, what is he, about nine?
Seven.
Eight years seven. Old. And they were living here in Marin County, which is in the schools there, probably.
Really good.
But the whole system and the whole way that the community works here and everything was not working for this child. And they said, we are going to move out of the Bay Area. We're going to move up out into the foothills, into this little community that is much more open. And
more
it's sort
nature.
Of a, more, there's more nature out there. It's a, sort of an artistic community out there. And we're going to put our child in alternative schools like Waldorf schools, or I don't know what they're sure. choosing for their child. But we are going to physically move ourselves, move our business, change our completely change the our way life. Of life and change this for our child. And that is when in the evolve or die situation, that is a family that has chosen to evolve rather than just stay with the culture that is now falling down.
Well, I honestly think that ADHD is a defense mechanism that prevents indoctrination. And I had a brother who was ADHD and was given Ritalin because, as my parents said, and many parents say, ooh, doctors know best.
Right.
And I'm sure that damaged him permanently. It changed the wiring of his brain. But even though I didn't have ADD or ADHD, I think I spent most of the time daydreaming in school.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yes, exactly.
So we are the imaginal cells. You know, Bruce right. Lipton's term, I don't know if he came up with it, the imaginal cells. I'm sure you've heard it. It's those early cells in the evolving butterfly, you know, that are completely different from the caterpillar cells. And at first, like, we could just explain this this metaphor. It's really helpful, actually. When a caterpillar is basically a parasite, it just goes around eating. And it has a, you know, it crawls around on its feet and lives on trees and basically eats itself, stuffs itself. And then at some point, against the caterpillar's will, something starts to change. And the caterpillar starts to emit the cells that will become the chrysalis. And the caterpillar finds itself against its own will being mummified inside this chrysalis. And then it goes through this process of evolution where at first these new cells, they're called imaginal discs or imaginal cells, start to show up in the body of the caterpillar. And the caterpillar's immune system at first attacks these cells. It says, get out of here. These are cancer cells. It thinks they're enemies. And so they could sort of see this is what's going on in our culture right now. There are people who are emerging who are saying, let's do it completely differently. Let's question the system. And they're attacked. And so the So that happens for a while inside the caterpillar's body until there are so many imaginal cells that the immune system of the caterpillar can't keep up, and the imaginal cells take over and the caterpillar's body just dies. A new organism completely forms that breaks out, and the butterfly is a totally different organism. It's not a parasite. It's more of a symbiotic organism. And it, you know, it's a pollinator and it flies. It doesn't, it's not ground-based. It's a completely different organism with a completely different way of living. And who would think that it came out of this other lowly little animal? And this is a perfect metaphor for the transformation of human culture, or for the transformation of the human being. From one style of living, from a parasitic way of living, into a symbiotic way of living. And that's, it takes time, but this is
happy
the process.
Happy birthday, butterfly. And you know, yeah. Yes, there's something for everyone to do, and everyone is important, and each cell begins to do just that very thing. It is more, you know, mostly drawn to do, and every other cell encourages it to do just that. Just because they're different doesn't mean they're negative. And the same thing with these children that are demonized in a way and are labeled with a mental condition called ADHD. Even children who are bedwetters right now, 2 years old, 3 years old, they're given prescription medication for that too.
This is the energy, the archetypal energy of the patriarchal civilization that says, my way or the highway. It says, here is the order. Here is the way in which you will perform. Here is the way in which you will develop. And if you develop anything out in any way outside of this, then you're cast out like Cain. And this is a very old archetypal modality of patriarchal culture, but it's a phase, and it's in one way we can focus on the horrible, you know, father, on Uncle Sam, on the Illuminati, on the whoever you believe is sort of at the top of the pyramid of this evil system, however you want to see it. And you can focus just on the dark side like that. But we talked a little bit about this in the beginning, that mechanism, even though it is horribly cruel and destructive, is the universe's mechanism for evolution, to spur evolution. And basically, we as human beings are being hit with everything about our old way of living that has fallen off of balance and gone to the extreme. Like giving a two-year-old bedwetter a drug is the extreme side of cultural order. And everything in this society that is to that degree of extremism or off balance is being shown to you. It's being put right in your face. And it's saying, this is where you're at, human being. This is where you're at, American or whatever nationality you are. This is where you're at. Look at yourself. Look at where you guys collectively are at, and do something about it. And do something. Sometimes it's just bring balance back into the situation and keep what you have. If you have there's all kinds of ways in which we live as communal human beings that don't need to be thrown away, but they just need to be rebalanced. And then there are aspects of the way that we have been living that need to be transcended completely.
I would just add that these wake-up calls, like the parent whose kid is bedwetting, and then, you know, if they question that, that's when the wake-up starts and a whole new journey can begin. For myself, when I was diagnosed with cancer, with cervical cancer, there was something in me that said, okay, well, those are my cells, and there's something in me that created the cancer. which set me out on a journey of doing physical healing and took me into all sorts of avenues of doing all these cleanses and actually healing myself. But through that process, it also woke me up to the medical establishment and how there had been cancer cures for, you know, 50 years, you know, 100 years and all these different things. So again, it gets back to this concept that these horrible things, everything that happens to us is an opportunity to look at it and take responsibility for it instead of projecting it and saying, oh, that's bad, or I have to go along with the program. Why not do a third thing and say, wait a minute, that's part of me. I'm going to take responsibility for this. That child is part of me. What's inside of me, you know, that's possibly contributing to my child having these problems? That's a big step. But for myself, taking 100% responsibility for my own cancer and my own life is really what set me out on the journey that I am now and set me on the deeper journey of into my programs, into my psyche of the work that I've been doing with Colin.
Think about that, Mel, really quickly, just to throw this in there. What Melissa just said. So we're talking about the example of the two-year-old bedwetter. And at first we were talking about, okay, well, so does this child have a problem and is the medical establishment correct? And they're saying, give the child this drug or whatever. And Melissa, basically what she was proposing, I want to make this clear, was a quantum leap, a quantum shift in the way that the parents would look at the problem. Rather than looking at the problem of the establishment is either right or wrong, or the child is either has a problem or they don't have a problem, the what she posed is she said, as parents, she says, wait a minute, let us look at this situation symbolically, metaphorically. What is going on here? Our child is having a bedwetting problem. A child is this old. And this is what's coming against us from the society. And this is what we have to deal with. And the parents could say, how is this a repeat of something that happened in our own childhood? How is our child just repeating the same kinds of cycles that we as parents underwent? How is our child now being traumatized at age two? And weren't we as parents also traumatized similarly around the same age? And so that's one level of waking up to this. And then an even deeper level of waking up to this is, what does this mean archetypally, symbolically, mythologically in my life? And what emotions and feelings are coming up through this circumstance, that this circumstance may actually be a catalyst for emotions and feelings of trauma and anger and abandonment that I have as a parent to come to the forefront so that I can look at them. Maybe this situation with my child is a psychic situation coming out of the psychic entity of the family that is coming out to show me something about myself as a parent that I need to learn, to show me about a trauma that I still haven't processed myself. And now my child is acting out my own trauma and showing it to me. And this will continue until I look at the source of this in my own psyche. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. And I sound like a broken record when I say that most people I interview go through some kind of physical or mental trauma before they find their true mission. In your case, Melissa, you probably discovered that you are responsible for your own health. And that's how I think that's how you took control. And it's unfortunate that in my personal life, I cannot talk about these subjects or the fact there are cures for pretty much every disease, including cancer. Nature gives us that disease, and nature gives us the cure also. Not a synthetic drug. And when I mention this, or used to rather, people look at me as if I need to see a therapist. And it is a sad state of mind when most people are brainwashed and cannot step outside the box, even when they see their own loved ones die because they are told there are no cures.
Yes.
That's the history of our civilization.
That is the history of our civilization. But again, what Colin is talking about is so important that we can really look at these events, these wake-up events, whether it be a child that has an issue or a family member has cancer or is sick. We can look at these, or just even in your job that you have a horrible boss, or all these different things that happen in our life, even small things like somebody cutting you off and being a horrible driver, and you getting upset at these external events are a representation, a mirror of what is going on in our own consciousness.
Absolutely.
This is a big, big step. This is the alchemical journey.
Remember in the Matrix, the metaphor of the Matrix of waking up to the virtual reality that is reality, or Plato's allegory of the cave, or mm-hmm. the Eastern Hindu philosophy of Maya, this that reality is not the true substance, that there is something behind it. In terms of understanding the psyche, in terms of spiritual alchemy, you can understand your outer world and the situations that occur in your outer world as mirrors of dynamics that are going on inside of you that have to be shown to you through the Matrix, through this outer reality that you think is reality. This is basically a mirror showing you all of the processes that are going on in yourself, because most of what you are conscious of, you are only conscious of a very tiny percent of what's going on inside of you and what's going on outside of you. We have a very selective perception. We're only looking through a tiny little periscope to see what we call reality. And so what is being discarded in out of our movies of life, and what is being included in our movies of life, the stuff that we're actually consciously perceiving and not throwing out, is the stuff that is most powerfully showing itself to us through our inner state. Anything that happens to you that's traumatic or that throws you off balance or makes you think twice has a resonant dynamic going on inside of your psyche. Otherwise, you would not react the way you did. You would just keep on moving like nothing affected you. If something affects you, if something really throws you off and makes you have to think twice about it, that is because it represents something oppositional that is going on inside of your mind, inside of your psyche. And if you cannot get to what that psychic source is, it will keep showing itself cyclically to you. You will keep finding yourselves in situations where you have to become angry at someone else, or you will keep finding yourself in situations where you will be abandoned again, or you'll keep finding yourself in situations where you're annoyed or otherwise traumatized, or whatever it is. These cycles will just keep showing themselves to you until you realize, hey, wait a minute. These are metaphoric, symbolic representations of conflicts that are going on inside of my own mind, that I can trace back to my childhood, that I can trace back to my family, that I can trace back to my culture. And once we put our eye on that and say, wait a minute, you know, this situation, maybe you're renting a house or something, and this is like the third time that you've had bad tenants that destroy the house and then move out, or that they're dealing drugs out of the house, or whatever the situation is, and you keep finding yourself in these repeating patterns, you can't just say, well, I guess the society is just really falling down because people are just scum. That's just what it is. No, how come you keep inventing things terrible happening in your life, but somebody down the street is not? And you have to realize that outer reality is just a representation of an internal conflict in yourself that still needs to be healed.
Our lives are the greatest teacher that we have.
this is where the term melt living in the movie comes from.
Yeah.
Is if you see your reality, everything about your reality as a movie screen, as a projection, and then you see your own psyche, your own mind as the projector, and you can go beyond your own mind to a more cosmic level, but through your own, your body and your consciousness and your mental system is a technology like a movie projector is. And it focuses all of this informational content in such a way so that you can see a movie. And this is the way our consciousness works and our bodies work. It focuses all of this energetic informational reality into a certain focus that we call our reality, our perception. And just like how a movie, all of the characters, all of the events, everything that's going on in a movie comes out of a pre-planned script. Well, in that same way, there are pre-planned scripts or programs that are coming to you genetically. They're coming to you culturally. They're coming to you from your own development as a child.
Archetypally.
They're archetypally. And these are the programs that are running in you that you are watching on the movie screen of life. And if you just look at the movie screen, you could just go through all of life just looking at the movie screen and going, okay, well, that's just a great movie and somebody else created it and it is what it is. And I enjoyed it or I didn't enjoy it. It was horrible. But only some people actually say, wow, this is really cool how the director put these scenes together, all the symbolism that's inside this movie, or how the cinematographer changed the perception of changed my perception through changing the way the camera was. And not only a few people actually get into the movie from a technician's point of view, from a magician's point of view, and say, how is this movie created? And could I create my own movie? Could I put together my own script? How could I change my own movie of life by becoming a director myself, a technician?
Hold it right there, because I wanted to segue more of this, because I had this thought that, you know, when I saw your website, livinginthemovie.com, I thought of Shakespeare's words, live, you know, is a stage, or the Truman Show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of us who are seekers of truth, like a prisoner who is freed from the cave of an allegory of the cave. And we come to an understanding that the shadows on the wall do not make up reality at all. For we can perceive the true form of reality rather than the mere shadows seen by the prisoners. I think we go through this all the time. Or if you have seen the movie Midnight Express, have you seen that movie?
Oh, no, I have not actually seen Midnight Express, although I've heard about it.
From the 1970s. Well, you know, he's in prison in Turkey, and they put him in a mental area of the prison where there's a big, you know, pole in the middle, and all the inmates are walking around in a circle clockwise. And then he realizes, wait a second, I'm not mentally disturbed or mentally challenged. I'm going to go around the opposite way. And everybody tries to grab him back to walk with them. And this is what happens to most of us who finally learn the truth. It's very difficult to go against all that herd outside. And it's people like the ones who are listening to us tonight who realize, like, wait a second, there's actually an escape. There's actually something I can listen to that can tell us some truth. When we come back, I also want to discuss the epigenetic factor of all of this. We hear of people who seem to have a normal life, but there is trauma transferred or induced to them by their parents or grandparents. How much of trauma is epigenetic or intergenerational? And all the solutions that you can bring to the table tonight. But tell us, how can people buy the book and learn more about your work, Colin and Melissa?
We actually offer our book Shadow Tech for free, the ebook, the PDF version of it on our website, shadowtechbook.com. But then you can get the Kindle version or the paperback version through Amazon, and there are links on the website.
Also, we have livinginthemovie.com, which is basically our info news site, where we post different articles that Colin writes, or little interesting wisdom notes that I write, or just sources of great information that we've come upon. Also, we have a live musical performance that we're working on called the O1 Experience. We're both musicians, and this is basically a rock opera, an alchemical rock opera that we're working on and we're recording right now. So
those are kind of some of the things that were, yeah. I should mention though, that livinginthemovie.com probably admittedly is what she mentioned is,
oh, it's
probably
Facebook
more,
page.
It's probably more in development and we're probably more active on our Facebook pages. But anyway, all of that you can find, through shadowtechbook.com.
I don't mean to put you on the spotlight. I love to listen to your music, by the way. But,
oh, yeah, that's right. There is a little medley on there, yes.
Yeah, we'll send that to you also.
Love to, but I have to ask you, are you recording on 432 hertz, A432 hertz?
Oh, hey, it's a good question. Just really quick, so 432 is like equal to, I think it's not quite a half step below standard 440 tuning. And we've done some experiments with it, and indeed it does seem to have a resonant quality to it. But I can tell you that it, in our case, it didn't seem, when we experimented with it, it didn't seem to be as much of a difference that would help us more than it would hurt us, because now when you want to jam with other musicians, and maybe if you're having live musicians coming in on the spot and improvising and stuff, and you tell everybody, hey, we're not tuned to A440 and we're not a step or a half step above or below A440, you're going to need to calibrate your digital tuner to 432 and then step on stage or into the recording studio. We didn't see an advantage that was...
We're also doing everything half a step down anyway, yeah, which is actually closer to...
closer.
Well, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No,
I was
no
just,
problem.
Since you're an audiophile, and folks, you can tell by the quality of the audio tonight, I wish every single guest had the same, you know, professional quality of audio. But I thought maybe they know about it. So at least you know, but it's difficult for other people who are not enlightened about A432 to go back to what the ancient ones provided, which was A432 hertz. But we'll discuss more when we come back. Folks, don't go anywhere. I'm Mel Fabregas, and I'm delighted to be here with my special guest tonight, Colin Davis and Melissa Mari, authors of the book Shadow Tech, Cracking the Codes of Personal and Collective Darkness. This is Mel Fabregas, and you're listening to Sanitas. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to the first segment of this very important Sanitas interview. If you enjoyed it and wish to listen to the rest, go to sanitasradio.com, click on members or subscribe, or tell someone else who will enjoy this and all our radio programs. If you are listening on YouTube, like, subscribe, and share it. Don't forget to visit the Sanitas store, where you can purchase pure organic sulfur, earthing and grounding products, supplements, our USB drive with all our shows, gift certificates, rebounders, and much more. Now, join me in the Sanitas member section to enjoy the rest. Thank you.